Welcome everyone to the Reading Corner. In this episode, Bias by Bernard Goldberg. So this is a book that basically blew the lid off the discussions of, I guess, whether there's a bias in the media when it comes to reporting the news or when there's journalism going on. See, there's a lot of morphing that happened over many years, where before you used to just rely on the news anchor to be able to deliver the news to you. Somewhere along the lines, someone figured out that they could weaponize it and turn it into basically what's akin to propaganda. We can actually trace this back to the 1950s, to when, I guess you could say, Senator Joseph McCarthy was hunting down to find out who was basically a spy for the Soviet Union or communist anywhere. And some people say he was on a witch hunt because he was investigating. He wanted to see Hollywood ties. He wanted to see political ties and publications as well. Like, different publications were probably putting in some coded messages in their newspapers or magazines or radio broadcasts and eventually television. So everybody said it was a witch hunt. History shows that he was right. That's why one of the, I guess, more famous or infamous exchanges were when Joseph McCarthy was investigating the news voice at the time, which was Edward Armerow. He was basically like the voice of news. And people, new generation or the generation thereafter of, I guess, news reporters were really inspired by how Edward Armerow interviewed individuals and covered the news, etc. This was during the radio days before it became television. And then we had a generation of the same thing, like a new, I guess, a new world of journalism. And with the dawn of the television, there was more, I guess you could say, news channels. And eventually, as television grew as a medium of a form of digestive entertainment, and not just radio, then we started getting coverages in different areas, such as local and eventually national. So in the late 80s, early 90s, we had the boom when it came to cable news networks. So the first one everybody thinks of and people hear it would be CNN. ABC's been around a very long time too, and CBS, I forget what CBS stands for, but I just know the B and S stands for Broadcasting Service. So they've been around a long time, and also the BBC. BBC was highly responsible for the code of messaging that was being delivered to Europe during World War II. So it's been used before. It's just that when it was, I guess you could say, utilized by the communists or Marxists for that matter, that it started to seep in, and not just through the news. There were other different mediums that were getting it out, such as indoctrinations in schools and higher learning institutions and stuff like that. But when it came to the media, people still depended on the truth being serviced. Like CNN's catchphrase, the most trusted name in news. Then you had NBC, which is basically a subdivision thereafter. You have MSNBC, which MS actually means Microsoft. So Microsoft National Broadcasting Channel, I think. That's what it stands for. Bernard Goldberg was a CBS insider. He worked at CBS. And he exposes how the media distort the news. So when this book came out, obviously he was panned for it. But it was also a New York Times bestseller. Here's from the back cover of it. I actually have the original hardcover when this book came out. I think it was, let's find out the publishing date on this thing. Because it's an old book. Well, old-ish. This one was published. Shows you how prepared I was for the Reading Corner, right? But 2001, that's what I thought, around 2001. The reason this book means a lot to me, you'll find out as I dive into it a little bit, but also because that marks the year of my political awakening, you could say. And that's how I ended up getting into what the Andrew Segovia Show is now. It started as an email newsletter, which morphed into a blog, which ultimately became a podcast. And now look at what it is today. So it's been 19 years since that started. And one of the things that got me going was this book, recommended to me by a college professor who he trained me on the art of debate and argumentation, and also how to speak. Basically, speech is different from just speaking. So taking in all of that to be able to really dive in and understand and hone in with the skills and finding out how the media actually distort is how I've been able to, I guess, digest headlines, especially nowadays. How I'm able to view things from a vantage point that sometimes even my own colleagues and friends and social circles say that you're exaggerating and all that. In fact, this year, being 2020 when I'm recording this, for the off the record segment of my show, I recorded an episode where I basically predicted everything that was going to happen right before the lockdowns began in the United States. And then I recorded a follow-up episode shortly when California itself started reopening, an episode called I Told You So. Everything that I had said would transpire, transpired. And at the heart of it all was the media. The media was behind basically all the fear-mongering, all the racial tensions that thereafter spiraled out of control, that led to the looting and rioting. And it's the media that was labeled by the president, whether you agree with it or not, as the enemy of the people, which I call the true enemy, because they are. And they've been covering up for themselves for the longest time, and they've been exposed under this administration because they're not hiding it anymore. They've basically, when a snake basically sheds its skin, that's what they've done. They've basically gotten out of their shells and exposed themselves for what they really are. But I've been talking about this for the longest time. Conservatives around any network you can think of have been complaining about bias in the media. And everybody said, oh, it doesn't exist. It's being said by the same outlets that are distorting the news because they're considered the gatekeepers. They're considered the truth bearers. So this book exposed how long they've been doing this. Bernie Goldberg isn't someone young when at the time that he wrote this. I mean, look at his picture. That's how old he was in 2001. So it's not like it was just some millennial that went in there and said, oh, yeah, conservatives were right. No, not at all. This is someone that was in there. So let me read a little bit of the back. I know it was a. I don't know, I kind of teased it and then just moved on. So in his nearly 30 years at CBS News, and that was as 2001. Emmy Award winner Bernard Goldberg earned a reputation as one of the preeminent reporters in the television news business. When he looked at his own industry, however, he saw that the media far too often ignored their primary mission, objective, disinterested reporting. Again and again, he saw that they slanted the news to the left. For years, Goldberg appealed to reporters, producers, and network executives for more balanced reporting, but nobody listened. The liberal bias continued. Now he blows the whistle on the news business, showing exactly how the media slanted their coverage while insisting they're just reporting the facts. Around the time I picked up this book, because I picked it up around 2003, by the time I picked up this book, there were some in the news media, some anchor men that I highly respected. And one of them you're probably familiar with is Dan Rather. Dan Rather was one of the voices that I depended on. I mean, he was at CBS News. One of the lines that I remember that because they're etched in my brain is 9/11, 2001, because he said, "You will remember this day for as long as you live." And that is true, because I do. So he was someone I depended on. You know what this man did that basically ended his career? He was trying to torpedo George W. Bush's re-election. That's 2004. Running up to the 2000 presidential election between George W. Bush and Al Gore, there were talks about George Bush having been a draft dodger, referring to refusing to obey the order of the United States government when it was being called up all men to arms to go fight in the Vietnam War. And they said because his daddy was rich and connected, and that's how Bush was able to not go to the Vietnam War. And that's how he was able to skip out of that. So as debunked as that was, leading up to the 2000 election, for the 2004 election, Dan Rather said he had the documents that proved that George W. Bush draft dodged. And it was very important at the time because the Democratic nominee, or the Democrat nominee for the 2004 election for the Democrat Party, was John F. Kerry, who actually served in Vietnam. Someone that regretted serving in there because he threw his medals away and protested against it. But that's not the point. They propped him up as a war hero against a draft dodger. And Dan Rather had the reports. All the media scandal. I don't know how someone got a hold of this and said, those documents look fake. They look pretty real to me. An investigation found out that Dan Rather used an old-timey typewriter to forge these documents. He then admitted that he did that. And thus was the end of Dan Rather. That's how desperate he was to remove a sitting president, lying, inventing information, because their narrative wasn't supported by facts. If that sounds a little familiar, that's exactly what's happening today, 2020, especially for the past 4 years. You have seen over and over again a lot of information being put out there that is not information. It's not even misinformation. It is disinformation. Disinformation in the form of lies. And it doesn't matter that there's no evidence to support anything that these individuals have said. They have gone to great lengths to edit clips, to piece things together, deep fake, if you will, to try to prove that what they're saying is true, just as Bernard Goldberg has been talking about for the longest time. Some of the stuff that he covered in 2001, targeting men. How much worse is that getting now? Liberal hate speech, which is being covered up big time. And I think one of the most important things was actually how, get this one. I want you to really think about this one. Because this one's a fact, and it's shocking, because it doesn't make sense. But it's something that happens. After 2001, of course, there was the big scare of terrorists infiltrating our country, whether it was legal or illegal immigration. That's why there was supposedly more security put at the border for this. There wasn't, but the point is that that's what they tried to do. And of course, in order for the war not to be fought here, but to be fought elsewhere, we had Afghanistan and the Iraq War to kind of be lightning rods to attract the terrorists. And that's why we were seeing the casualties in the way they were against our soldiers overseas. But that doesn't mean there weren't terrorists here. There were and there are. And I do mean there are. There's still terrorists to this day, both foreign and domestic, in the United States. So with all that, basically the public, because of fear, which is why there's a lot of conspiracy theories about 9/11. They'll point to World Trade Center Tower number 7 that was never hit and it's collapsed. With all this stuff, they'll talk about that this was all used as a way to increase the powers of the government to control its people, to fear-mongering, and basically to remove our liberties through what is called the Patriot Act. The Patriot Act that was championed basically bipartisan, and guess who never let it go? Because it was meant to expire. And the ones that kept approving its extension were the Democrats. But the media at the time, and of course, before Obama got in, would always point to how evil Republicans are because they wanted this. I just swallowed a burp. warts and all, folks. That's how this stuff goes. But the The thing is that the coverage of all this, the coverage even of the war on terror, has been incredibly biased, for which is why there was so much opinion turned against the war itself. And I said, well, we never found any WMDs, not to the extent that it was assumed that he had. Why did anybody believe that Saddam Hussein had it in the first place? I mean, now, well, not just us, United Nations. It's because the United States gave it to Saddam Hussein. I'm not going to get into that conversation. That's a whole other topic, and that's not even it's something here for the reading corner. It's like, but Andres, why are you talking about all these different issues? To put into context the power of this book. This book that will open your eyes, and this for those of you that will probably be reading this at this day and age, is 20 years later. So the issues that are covered here are basically ancient history to a lot of people. That's why I'm bringing up issues that happened after this book was printed, because the stuff that's printed here, I remember those issues even though I was a youngin. I mean, I was, as a kid, I remember Waco, the attack on Waco in Texas. That one was also a slant in the media. I remember also seeing the images of the soldiers being their dead bodies being desecrated by the Somalis during the failed mission in Mogadishu. And as of the time of me recording this, this is actually the 27th anniversary of that Black Hawk Down incident. So again, media coverage was powerful there, because the media coverage there basically changed foreign policy for the United States forever. And how we engage in the Middle East and other involvements for us, you know. And that's the power of the media. And we're seeing it basically all in all out force right now. And this book opened me to that understanding 17 years ago. And I started catching the lies within the school newspaper at my college and ultimately university when I started seeing it for myself in the newspapers that I would read, or the news articles eventually, and blogs and all that stuff. Because, as a matter of fact, before I started recording this today, very early in the day, a dear friend of mine asked me, hey, what do you use for fact checkers? Fact checkers today are different than fact checkers in the past. So I had many different ways of trying to answer that, but I was as generally neutral as I could be in telling you're going to use left wing and right wing fact checkers basically, and then weighing them against, like, well, what is it? Because that's how bad it's gotten today compared to what it was 20 years ago, when these people in positions of media pretended to be objective. Now we have people that say they want to be journalists. Why do you want to be journalists? Because I want to change the world. Change the world. That's not what journalism is. Journalism is reporting the news. No, they want that Pulitzer Prize winning piece, that because they either took that picture or they reported this one article, that it changed policy or whatever it is, or that it brought awareness worldwide. That's what they mean now about either journalistic writing or photogenic journalism, because the power of an image. Another example of media bias would be the topic of what is now known as climate change. Because that's an area that I covered extensively for a long time. And for 50 years now, it was supposed to be global cooling, which then later changed to global warming when the evidence didn't fit what they were talking about. And then they changed it back to global cooling, which then they changed again to global warming for the early 2000s, which then they were changing it back to cooling, but then they said, you know what? No one's believing us anymore. So let's just flip the switch and just call it climate change, all-encompassing, so we don't have to say global warming or global cooling anymore. The downside for them has been that they use the same arguments every single time. And every single time they used it, they said within 10 years, within 10 years, within 10 years. But they kept moving the goalpost over and over and over again. They did it again. Al Gore's An Inconvenient Truth said that Armageddon should have been here by what, 2010, 2012? 8 years have passed since then, and the world's still here. And things like that. So now people are debating the so-called science, because they say we believe in science. That's what they say now, because climate change deniers, as they're called, are equated to Holocaust deniers. And I wish I were kidding. I'm not. That's how exaggerated they have gotten. They want to silence anybody that there speaks against climate change. Because climate change, I did an episode about this on Off the Record, has become the religion of Green. And that's actually a PragerU video too that just recently debuted, which I recommend it because it really condenses that basically all of it. But I've been calling the Green movement a religion for the longest time for the left because they say everything that any religion would. There's sins that you got to atone for, there's repentance that you got to do, there's things you have to commit to. It's like a religious thing, and someone you have to report to for accountability. I wish I were kidding. This is true. And in 2020, same thing happened. They basically, NBC of all of them, opened up an online shrine, a confessional, if you will, to go confess your climate sins. Not kidding. That is real. And that's one of the episodes that I did. All of this being talked about by this book, that he was trying to blow the lid, says, look, you guys are really going this extreme. Nowadays, it is totally extreme. Totally. Fox News, you would just say, oh, they was lambasted for being, it's a propaganda machine of the right. It's the right wing news channel. Why? Because they're the only ones that were actually reporting more fairly and covering the George Bush administration versus the rest of the media that was panning him all the time. But eventually it wore Fox out that Roger Ailes at the time and Rupert Murdoch decided to, you know what, let's change a lot of things up. Let's get rid of a lot of these conservative anchor men and spokespeople here. And we will still bring them on every now and then, but we got to get leftists in here. There are more Democrats on any given time and leftists on Fox News than you would find a Republican conservative on any of the other mainstream media news in a week. That's how bad it gets. There's even a recent video as of this recording where Senator Ted Cruz of Texas went on CNN to be interviewed by Chris Cuomo. That turned into a boxing match. You thought the debate was fiery, but this one was a little more sensible, if you will, because it was shorter. But anyway, with all that, even if Fox went that direction, Drudge Report that I counted on for the longest time, as of now, I would say about 12 months, I noticed that there was a change in the tone of the coverage where it looked like someone that was either supporting Trump. That's why they say, oh yeah, Drudge Report is just another right-wing website. All he does is post links to stories. That's all. It's, if anything, Drudge every now and then gets very early scoops, which is insane. He became famous or infamous for literally breaking the news about Bill Clinton's infidelity in 1996 when he was involved with Monica Lewinsky. And so that was then. Well, it sounds like I'm going on a rant. I'm just giving you a perspective because that's what the book club is supposed to be about, a discussion. I'm not discussing the book. I'm discussing what the book was about. These things happened, are happening, and are worse now than they ever were since he blew the whistle. Because the very ones saying that this doesn't happen, there's no bias, there's no censorship of the right, are the very ones censoring and have a bias against the right. In the past 18 months, we have seen big tech empowered by Democrat donors and financiers, and in cahoots with the mainstream media, call out anything they want. NBC literally phoned into Facebook over the summer and said, why is that website still up for this other one? Why are they allowed to be advertising on your site? Why are they even allowed a Facebook page on you? All they are is a hate-filled, bigoted website. You got to take them down. They're not real news. This is a competitor saying that about another one just because they disagree with the vantage point. That's not how mainstream, that's not how news is supposed to operate. News is supposed to be the news. That's why I prefer to go straight to the sources, which is, and I don't mean like straight to the source, like, oh, which media outlet do you trust more? I still go to Reuters, and they have gone left, but I still go to Reuters. It's easier to get more central viewpoints by reading outlets that are outside of the country. Yeah. Like, I turn to European newspapers. I don't read Euro news as much, but I do read BBC, which is more left-wing, but The Guardian, The Telegraph, The Daily Star, I think that's theirs. The Sun, some people say The Sun, that's like a tabloid thing. Hey, They get some things right sometimes too. So don't discount them. They've been doing a lot better job than the fake news over here in the United States. And in the United States, it becomes a lot more difficult. That's why I prefer to go straight to The Wire. The Wire is the actual news before it becomes opinionated journalism later on. And some of those that have it are the very ones that are guilty of slanting the news, like the AP and Reuters. There's a Twitter handle called Breaking News. That's another one. You know, these are things that just go straight to it, where the headlines are actually the news. That's huge. Because then when you see what happens when everybody else gets it, like ABC, NBC, Fox News, even Fox News, CBS, Slate, Snoops, Daily Beast, Daily Caller, when everybody else starts getting it and you start seeing the headlines are like the flip, I have pictures of tweets. I even screenshotted these things just to show how ridiculous the bias is, and I'm not gonna flash them on the screen here, but there's two moments, especially NBC, because they're the worst. Oh, well, at least NBC doesn't hide it anymore. CNN still pretends that they are the most trusted name in news. They're the worst, but at least NBC owns it up. They have only left-wing anchors, but at least they're not lying to you about their positions. They are, you know that you're tuning into NBC, they are all left-wing. And in the case of CNN, they pretend they're objective journalists. They're just as bad as the left-wing anchors in NBC, or absolutely worse. Because they're even letting their personal hatred filter through the camera. It's insane. And this is, again, stuff that Bernard Goldberg, Bernie Goldberg, that's his nickname, has been warning about for the longest time. And he was basically excommunicated by his reporting colleagues, because like, dude, you betrayed us, man. Because exactly what it looked like. One such recent case is a man named Dave Rubin. A little bit about Dave Rubin. He has a channel called The Rubin Report. And The Rubin Report was started. What he does is something special. I actually really like the way he presents. His presentation is a long form interview. So they average about 1 hour, the sit downs. And these interviews that, again, they're for an hour, is discussing issues. Dave Rubin was an unapologetic leftist. And I say was because a key point. He actually worked. I believe he was a writer or an editor, not in the sense of editing, like because he's like a chief editor or whatever, but he worked in the back channels of The Young Turks. The Young Turks was a channel that is highly pushed by YouTube because they're an online news source that basically got their start on YouTube. Well, foreign caliphates and Al Jazeera are the ones that funded basically the Young Turks, run by a man named, still run by a man, Cenk Uygur. And he is, I guess you could say he's Turkish, but he also has a very strong, he has a very strong personality. He doesn't hide his bias, but he pretends to be objective. And this man says that he's denied that he's ever said that the Armenian Genocide never happened. And today is the anniversary to remember the Armenian Genocide, by the way, as I record this, which is October 3rd. And he denied it and still denies it. And so he and the staff there, they're hardcore leftists. There and they pretend to be objective journalists, and all they do for a living is basically a hit job on conservatives and Republicans. Republicans and conservatives are two different things, folks. So they do a hit job on the Republicans and the conservatives. Dave Rubin was working there, and he saw this for what it was. Like, hey, I thought we were supposed to be more objective than this. That's not what I was brought in to do. And basically, his complaints fell on deaf ears. He ends up leaving the Young Turks. After he leaves the Young Turks, he starts the Rubin Report, but he needed a place to technically host it because you're going to drive traffic. You need to have the production crew and the host server to be able to even project all of this. He ended up joining The Blaze. That's big because The Blaze is run a conservative media channel run by Glenn Beck. And for those of you that remember Glenn Beck, who used to be on cable news, he's considered just a huge conservative, one of the biggest conservatives in the media. Now, that title I'll grant to him. One of the big things, though, is people confuse it. They say that he's Christian. He's not. He's Mormon. That's a big difference. But I'm not going to get into that. The point is that he got his big old channel, and he's conservative. So when Dave wanted to do his centrist with the left-wing slant show, it was picked up by a conservative. And the leftist like, the flip are you doing, you traitor? So then his friends started slinging mud at him, most notably because of who he is. Dave Rubin is not just a Jew. He's also openly gay and married. Huge. And who's the one that gave him a home to be able to do a show? A conservative Mormon. And who have become among Dave's closest friends? Get ready for this. Orthodox Jew Ben Shapiro. Practicing Catholics like Michael Knowles, who actually recently guest hosted Dave Rubin's show. Steven Crowder, a Protestant, who's also friends with Dave. It's like, what the flip? How does that even happen? Because the dialogue's important. The religious differences, ethnicities, and all that aren't what's bringing them together. That's what makes them different. And what unites them is their common goal for information and getting the truth out there through discussions, through informative exchange of ideas instead of shout matches where nobody listens. It's kind of like the way I approach my show. So with all that in mind, that's why the Rubin Report is one thing that I've actually enjoyed recently because there's been a lot of great conversations there. Dave Rubin was the guy that was able to get Jordan Peterson and Ben Shapiro sitting together across from one another in one room. Do you know the IQ of that room? The IQ in that room should have blown those walls off and the ceiling away. You know, it's like, it's amazing how much was there. But it was also Dave Rubin who invited the late great apologetic Ravi Zacharias to have a conversation with him for 1 hour. And it's a beautiful thing. And you know what's even more incredible? Because it's through these conversations that we learn more about one another. Dave Rubin now labels himself a libertarian. He was an outright liberal and has become libertarian. And along the way, he was staunchly pro-choice and has become more like wondering, have I been wrong about abortion? Because to some extent, he still supports it as of now. But because of the engagement that he's had with different individuals, because he's seeking the truth and to discuss these things, to discuss real issues, his mind has been changed a lot. But I think the most notable thing that's happened to him, big one, this is huge, his long interview with none other than the sage from South Central Los Angeles, Larry Elder. If you're not familiar with Larry Elder, this is a man you gotta be familiar with, and I don't think he's written a recent book, but he's a man that I remember hearing when I was getting into this around the time that I got this, because Larry Elder, strong conservative, recently came out with a documentary called Uncle Tom. Huge, speaks volumes. It'll shock you. Definitely worth watching. It's coming to Amazon Prime. Shout out to the stage, South Central. And he sat down with Dave Rubin. This was about 4 years ago. When they were sitting down, this was when Dave Rubin was very leftist. And Dave Rubin wanted to talk about systemic racism. White, liberal, privileged, talking to a black man. And he was talking about, how do you feel about all the systemic racism, the police brutality and all that. And Larry Elder took him to town on it. The impact, as Dave Rubin testifies, since that conversation that they had, and how Larry just shredded all the narrative the media pushed out there, and still pushing out today, by the way, and how he shredded him, is how it started Dave's mind from going left to right. He's a centrist now. His ideologies from the left have become centrist, and he's now a libertarian. He's fiscally conservative, socially liberal, but a lot's changed for him. A great deal. Because of the conversations. And that's what you people need to learn to separate. What is an exchange of ideas and conversation, and what is news? It's not that anymore. It's an agenda disguised as news. And it's exacerbated nowadays with the power of social media. Social media is not news. There are some news channels on social media, but there are distorted content. It's insane how short of attention spans people can have and not follow up on a major story once the truth gets out about it. We're seeing a lot of that play out in real time right now. Because people only know the triggering incident and then live on that and ignore everything else. And when everything else comes along the way, they won't believe it. Because facts, what are they don't mean anything anymore. It's about, how does it make me feel? And that's the power that the media knows. That's why they don't care. That's why when the media has to retract information, they just bury it and then they say, hey, I did my part. I retracted it. Yeah, but you didn't yell it at the top of the highest mountain like you did when you broke fake news. Yes, this crap continues. It's not going to stop anytime soon. But one thing's for sure. And that's what I did in my episode of I Told You So for the Off the Record. They are not hiding anymore. At all. They are vehemently foaming at the mouth. Because the current administration, that's how much they hate him. Then now people see them for what they are. And for why they are the enemy of the people. Because they don't care what harm they bring to people. They don't care about the people that have committed suicide by fake news. Because they become targets of fake news. Particularly this year. I lost count of all the suicides because of fake news. The only kid that stood up to the media and is still fighting for his name is the Covington student who was wearing the MAGA hat, smiling outside the Supreme Court as a First Nation was like confronting him. The media set something up. The activists set it up, clipped it to what they wanted, and destroyed that boy's life. That's why he's won every single defamation lawsuit, and not one of these media types have covered it. That's the kind of crap that goes on. They only like you if you're lockstep rank file with them, drinking their Kool-Aid. But as soon as you start tipping out of the line, just like in any religion, they'll excommunicate you and then they'll destroy you. Media bias. Bias. By Bernard Goldberg. A CBS insider exposes how the media distort the news. They're not hiding it. And I want to read some of the flap because of what else you'll learn. In bias, you'll learn how on issues ranging from homelessness to AIDS, reporters have simply regurgitated the propaganda of pressure groups they favor to detriment of honest reporting. The Peter Jennings test for classifying politicians and how all networks do it. The network color bar. Why so many victims on network news stories are blonde-haired, blue-eyed, and middle-class. How one high-level CBS news executive told Goldberg that, of course, the news networks tilt left, but in the next breath, they'll deny, he said that to Goldberg. One of the biggest stories of our time, and why you probably didn't hear about it on the evening news, this was back in the 90s, how political correctness in network newsrooms put sensitivity ahead of facts. This is before political correctness and cancel culture. The real Dan Rather, a man who regards criticism of liberal bias as treason. Well, it wouldn't be 3 years later after this book is done that Dan Rather, the Titan, is finally brought down, along with a bunch of other one of these guys. And then the Me Too movement destroys almost everyone else of them. These were the men that would sit in front of a camera and tell you the news when they were in fact steering you to a perspective. And to close this all out, I know this one became longer than I thought, I just want to mention one of the big things why I appreciate this book. It is thanks to this book that I have been able to understand doctrinal studies within religion, if you will. There's being Christian, and then there's those that are actually studying, and those that study the theology, if you will, That's how you start understanding more about the world around us, how politics works, the morality of things and the immorality. What is evil? What is good? Is there that much of a gray area and all that stuff? You start really diving into it. Some people think it's about reading the Bible. It's actually about studying it. Studying it is important because how do you study it? That's just it. And how do you know that's the whole Bible and all that? And how do you take into context the stuff outside the Bible? What's peripheral to it, particularly the Jewish writings? So with this book, it opened my understanding into the life that I grew up being born and raised in a church and made me stronger for that matter, particularly because my father's side of the family are predominantly Jehovah's Witnesses. And Jehovah's Witnesses are very well versed in the art of debate and argumentation. I did not realize that until this. So it was through this that I was able to understand better how to project my beliefs, understand my beliefs too, but also find where I felt the Jehovah's Witnesses were wrong in their perspectives and in their arguments and stuff. So that's actually gotten me into a lot of trouble, but it's because of this book. So I've gotten in equally as trouble in politics as I have in religion. The only difference is that I have not been disowned by family, but I have been disowned for being a conservative Christian Republican. All three things. You can be a combination of all those three or one of those things, just FYI. So yeah, I mean, it's amazing how much has changed since my college days to now. It's sad, but I'm glad to know and to be able to tell all you all that I told you so. Anyway, this is how the Reading Corner is meant to be. And if you like this version of it compared to the other ones that I've done, by all means, let me know. But this is one of the books that I highly recommend. It's still available on paperback, which I have a copy of that too, because Bernard Goldberg did update it to include more events that proved them right after the original hardcover came out. And it's definitely an eye-opener. So, Bias by Bernard Goldberg. Definitely a worthwhile read to understand what the flip is happening in our world today. Thanks for watching this episode of The Reading Corner. I'll see you in the next one.